This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Nicholas Kollerstrom, and he is the author of Breaking the Spell, The Holocaust, Myth, and Reality. The website is whatreallyhappened.info, and we were a few minutes back talking about the vulnerability of children who are exposed to this. And I do have a friend that when she first heard about this, she felt such an incredible amount of guilt. I mean, she felt suicidal. And when I learned about it, I had nothing but the deepest empathy for them. And I started reading everything that I could. And I read Nizzilli's book, which was actually it was fiction. It was just made up. He was never there, just as Elie Wiesel was never there. And when we read something in a book, we think, oh, it must be true. And people are very, very, they're kind of brainwashed. And of course, this has been very, very deliberate. But when you deliberately destroy a child's mind with fables, that is the most egregious thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, I mean, I knew someone who took her child away from school because it was being taught to hate by this. And we have got laws prohibiting the generating of race hate. I think we need to demand that both sides be heard in this. In particular, my opinion is all Americans should insist that the Holocaust refers to what was done to Native American Indians, right? That's the American Holocaust. That's the one that really happened, okay? It did really happen. And not to some fictional process in Europe, which is made up at Nuremberg. Admittedly, America helped to make it up at Nuremberg. But let's not continue with British American atrocity propaganda 60 years after the event, okay? It's about time we sobered up. And I suggest that the Holocaust should be taught in schools, and we should have Holocaust memorial museums, but they should be about what happened to Native Americans and not anyone else.
But then, of course, when you look at what the Americans were doing, what the British and the Soviets and the Americans were doing, don't you think that the Holocaust was a distraction away from what the destruction that they were engaging in?
Well, too right. They just perpetrated the greatest war crime ever conceived by man, the systematic incineration of cities, European cities, one after the other, just incinerating cities, women, children, everyone. And actually, Jews had been sent out to labor camps were lucky. Okay, they avoided that incinerating process, which is more or less forgotten or not talked about today because there's no story to it. Okay, it just happened. These cities were wiped out, and then after the war, Britain and America decided they didn't want to take the blame for this. Let's make up a new story, and so we can walk away with a moral high ground. So they made these terrific high-sounding Nuremberg principles about genocide, which quite obviously applied to what they had just done.
And what they're continuing to do.
What they continue to do, yeah. It's very dubious that they hung the Germans on the basis of a war of aggression. But we're digressing a bit now. But it's very hard to show that was aggression. Mainly the countries Hitler went into up until war being declared were, as it were, historic bits of Germany, where people who spoke German and felt they were German and had some claim to being reunited. So the concept war of aggression could not really be defined. And that's partly why it was a military tribunal, that the other side didn't get to state its point of view and wasn't allowed to, and was just demonized. I think we live in a civilization with a comic book concept of evil, where you've got the bad guy who is wicked because he's evil, you know, and he has to be destroyed and blown apart. And that is the way the Nazis are always embodied and envisaged in our not only in fiction, but in actual history books, that they are bad because they're wicked, you know, and that then wickedness can then be projected onto any dissident citizen. If you're not accepting the state's mythology, oh, you must be a Nazi.
Certainly.
So
and that ties in with the religiosity of the Holocaust. They were evil, and of course they were the destroyers of the chosen people, and so of course they have to be castigated as being the most evil. And you brought up the word comic book, which reminded me of the, well, it's kind of a comic book of sorts. It's called Tales of the Holo Hoax, which you referred to in your book.
Yeah. Very good text by Michael Hoffman. You know, he's quite profound.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Catholic character, quite a profound character. And he wrote the text, okay, which is why it's rather good.
Yes.
And I think Muslims being so under attack these days should republish that Tales of the Holocaust. I mean, I think it's their answer. With all the Charlie Hebdo and anti-Muslim stuff we're being fed with non-stop, I would think they should get that out. I think it's pretty well spot on, you know.
Exactly, yes. I love the way that you have laid out the book. You mentioned all of the references to 6 million dying, and this started in 1900 as a result of the Zionist conference in 1897. So in 1900, I believe it was in June, that rabbi, let's see, his name just flew out of my head, that rabbi, what is his name? He mentioned that that 6 million Jews were dying. It was in the New York Times. And many of the references that you have are in the New York Times. But there were 166 times that a Holocaust of the Jews was mentioned in the 45 years. I mean, in major newspapers, but most particularly in the New York Times.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's just a hellish mantra that keeps pulsating through the 20th century. It sort of comes out of nowhere and just begins then. And now it infests all of our minds. And it's a sort of collective noun for European Jews, you know, 6 million Jews.
Right. Beginning in 1900. It was Stephen Wise, yes, in June 11th, 1900.
Yeah, and then it ends up at Nuremberg as a component of the greatest lie ever told. And that is threefold in its essential being, okay? Firstly, the idea that the Germans wanted to exterminate a particular ethnic group, the Jews. Secondly, they did it with huge mass gas chambers. And thirdly, that they did it to 6 million of them. Those are the essential three components of the greatest lie ever told. And that is what you have to believe to be a good citizen and hold down your job and have a pension and have your friends talking to you, okay? And that's a kind of analogy with, making an analogy with Christian religion, that is the Holy Trinity of the Holocaustian religion, okay?
Right. And you did lose some friends?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, that was the most terrible thing, because I was so blackened and vilified by the media and by blogs. Suddenly, you know, really old friends suddenly couldn't talk to me anymore. And that was the weird thing. I'd have thought people would come and ask me about my view, you know, what is it you're really saying? But so many of them were shocked and aghast by what they read in the newspaper that, you do lose friends. I mean, you make other ones, okay? Other people, I would say that if you come out, I urge listeners to come out and express your view, find your view and say it and talk about it. Don't be afraid. Do not act out of fear or timidity. You come out that your life and your conversations will be more interesting, that there will be stress and there's always some risk if you're employed. But I do recommend people do it because you're living in the light of truth then.
Which
indeed. Without that, your life is kind of empty and meaningless.
Indeed, and that's applicable to scientific investigation into everything. I believe that, as you indicate in your book, that looking at the records at the time that they were created. And the Germans are very, very efficient. They record all their data.
Exactly, yeah.
And there's no document that talks about extermination. And if there were, it would have come out. That would have been the first thing that they would have produced at Nuremberg.
Yeah, well, the documents that do exist, in the latter part of 1942 and the beginning of 1943, an urgent commands from the centre, the top Nazis, that mortality in the camps must be reduced, because the great endeavour to get useful industrial work out of the labour camps cannot succeed with this terrific mortality going on. Let's not underestimate that, especially around Auschwitz, it was a nightmare thing with piles of dead bodies, far more than can be burnt, stinking bodies and diarrhea, dysentery, people shitting all over the place. It was a real vision of hell, okay? And that is how the initial story of the Holocaust got going. It was came out of that hellish environment by people. Also, typhus does have an effect of hallucination, that people were getting hallucinatory stories, and the great fiction of the Holocaust came out from that, okay? But in reality, applying the what's called special treatment, whereby everybody coming into the camp, you get showered, you take off your clothes get de-loused, you shave all your hair off, and maybe you get your clothing back or you get some other clothing. That was successful, and that once the Zyklon started to be used in the middle of 1942, the gas chambers, the ones that did really exist, once they started to be used, mortality went down, not up. Okay, that's the all-important thing. The percent monthly mortality was gradually reduced over the course of that year. That's what the data shows.
Right, they were trying to save their workers. They were trying to keep them healthy, and yeah. And you indicate too in the book how the typhus may have been introduced into the camp.
Yeah, I think that was David Irving. He thought that a bunch of Poles introduced it, thinking they could give it to the staff, and instead it broke out throughout the camps. In the British intelligence decrypts, there is an account of a whole busload of Poles being taken out into the woods and shot. I just thought that might be them reaching a judgment and sentencing the Poles for
right.
that. I say that we occasionally get accounts of people being shot, mainly if they try to escape. Anyone trying to escape would be shot, that is the main thing you hear in the decrypts. Otherwise, Rudolf Hess had strict orders. Any SS guards who mistreated the inmates, struck them, for example, could be court-martialed, and there are trials of SS officers getting dismissed or accused of mistreating the inmates.
Right.
So that's the real Rudolf Hess, the guy who was proud of his camp and ran it properly. You know.
Right. Now, you also talked about the lesser-known camps, Treblinka, Belzec, and Sobibor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're different kind of camps. They're transit camps.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they don't have a resident population. This whole endeavour to get industrial work out of the inmates, that is not so for those camps. Those camps are on the eastern border of what was then Poland, okay? They were basically, you'd go for a shower and be sort of de-loused. There was actually a change in the railway gauge as you went from Poland to Russia, so the trains had to change. And Treblinka, for example, what was near that railway station. So you'd have a large population travelling through those camps.
Right.
So they had a different kind of function. The myths that grew up around those camps is quite interesting. For example, there's terrific stories about Treblinka. And at Nuremberg, the story is 800,000 Jews meet their end at Treblinka. Okay? And at Nuremberg, it was they would get steamed. They would be like lobsters and killed by being steamed, right? And then it was found that this story just did not have credibility, right? People just weren't believing it. So that had to be changed to diesel exhaust gas, right? Everyone knew that the clever Germans had invented diesel to run their motors on. And the diesel exhaust did smell absolutely frightful. And so the whole story at Treblinka was that 800,000 had been killed by diesel exhaust gas, okay? That was then told, I think, later on in Nuremberg, when people, the boiling like lobsters, steaming like lobsters, wasn't very credible, okay? And then it wasn't for quite a while, again, until the 1980s, people realised that diesel exhaust is not actually lethal, right? Because the whole point about diesel exhaust is that it burns up all the carbon monoxide. There was not enough carbon monoxide in the diesel exhaust to actually kill you. So again, that is embarrassing for the traditional Holocaust story. They got the big textbooks with people being gassed with diesel exhaust, and it's too late now. They can't change those textbooks. They can't change it a third time. They've really changed the story. They've really had two different stories of how these people were gassed. And at Treblinka, you just got a wide expanse of green grass with trees around them, and you've got this fantastic, preposterous story. Nobody's shown any gas bodies. Nobody's shown any buried bodies. Nobody's shown any gas chambers, right? There's just nothing there. And you've got this hallucinatory story, 800,000 gas with a non-lethal gas, and then they're buried, and then, get this, the bodies are dug up and burned.
Right.
Well, if you're fighting a war, would you really want to kill 800,000 people for no reason, bury them, dig them up, burn them, and then scatter their ashes into the river? I mean, who believes this stuff, you know? Why does anyone want to believe a crackpot story like this? I mean, we had Birmingham Science Department, a very respectable British university, right? Birmingham Science Department sends this woman over to
Dr.
Treblinka.
Caroline Sturdy Coles.
That's right, yeah. Didn't even bring her homework. And she goes over there, and she has a radar detecting thing that cannot actually detect bodies under the ground, but it detects some boulders. And they've been told by some rabbi that they're not allowed to disturb the dead, okay? So that's why they can't dig. So they're not allowed to dig. And the big headlines, science study refutes revisionist claims. What did they find? I would have thought that rather endorsed the revisionist.
Right. I mean, they didn't find anything except a few rocks, and
rocks,
but they couldn't actually detect any human remains. So
no, they couldn't. No. But this shows you the religious nature of the subject, doesn't it? I mean,
right.
To go all the way out there, not be able to dig up, have a radar thing which detects some rocks under the ground, and then she says, "Oh, presumably these are the gas chambers." You know?
Right. Oh my goodness. Alrighty, we are going to a 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com, and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com, or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com. Or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821. Or visit PureEffectFilters.com.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership, and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Dr. Nicholas Kullerstrom, and he is the author of Breaking the Spell, The Holocaust Myth and Reality. The website is whatreallyhappened.info. And I think it's very interesting that, and I believe maybe reiterated by the Holocaust Memorial Commission, which states that one cannot disturb the ground where the Jewish victims are buried because it's sanctified ground, and so one cannot go about digging them up. So that's why they couldn't do that at Treblinka.
Yeah.
But that is also the case in the Rhine Meadow camps, where the encampments were, where the enclosures were, the German government will not allow any digging where those where the camps were, the Eisenhower death camps were, it's they're not Jewish victims there, but I believe they want to cover the the crime against humanity perpetrated against the Germans, whose status they altered in order to starve them.
Yeah, well, Eisenhower was Jewish, and
that's what they say. But if you, I think he was actually German, according to. I know they called him the Swedish Jew at West Point.
Right. Okay. Well, let's remove that. I don't know. But the point is, these were the real death camps. Okay, after
yes,
the war.
Yes.
You had absolutely real death camps, intentional of slow, agonizing death. And over a million Germans die that way. And would you agree that this was going on while the Nuremberg trials were in progress? This was the amazing hypocrisy, that they were convicting the Germans for a genocide attempt for which they could show no documents. A lot of Nuremberg documents were just kind of made up, by the way, and they kept being read out, and no primary sources were ever alluded to. And at the same time, a real genocide was going on that was not mentioned. It was just off the agenda, okay? The Germans who had surrendered were not allowed to go back to Germany, were not allowed to go home. They were kept and died slowly. Yeah.
Exactly.
That is the horror of the situation. It makes you ask, what was the point of the Second World War supposed to be, that to destroy the spirit of a nation like this, not just to crush it militarily.
Right. And it wasn't just Hitler that they were after. According to some of the bankers, they said they were going to go after the Germans themselves. And this was something that was occurring, and a feeling that they had long before Hitler ever entered the picture. It was certainly, well, during World War II, World War I, and even before that. So you can't say that it was, they were just after Hitler. No, it wasn't that they were just after Hitler.
Yeah.
They were just after Germany.
Yeah, well, Germany always yearned for friendship with Britain, for alliance of friendship with Britain, First World War and the Second World War, and it could never be. And anyway, let's not get too much into generalizations. Just in the late 30s, Germany did the frightful, intolerable thing. It had its own bank, issued its own currency free of Rothschild's central bank control. Okay,
right.
They had a national bank, and that was maybe the key to the tremendous regeneration of Germany in the 1930s.
Absolutely.
Having a national bank in which money was debt free. It was not interest at source, and it was under the control of Germany. And I believe that's the only European nation in the 20th century which managed to do that. And if you look in the mid-30s, the statesmen were full of praise for National Socialism and what it was achieving. And then suddenly, once that happens, it becomes, you know, the arch-fiend. And the devil himself has appeared on earth, and it cannot be vilified enough.
Sure. Churchill had some wonderful things to say about the economic situation. But then all of a sudden, everything kind of switched, and all of a sudden they had to declare economic warfare in the spring of 1933 in order to halt this, because certainly if it worked well in Germany, it would work well in the other European countries.
Yeah, they managed economic recovery despite the terrific worldwide boycott by international Jewry, who had declared war against Germany. Germany needed trade in order to get the food to live on. It wasn't self-sufficient in food, and it did manage this despite this enormous boycott. But at the end of the decade, they decided to put Jews into separate camps to get them out from the main population. Obviously, they're very much condemned for doing that. But it seems to me rather similar to what America did after Pearl Harbor, that they put Japanese into labor into camps, you know, as enemy aliens.
Right. Well, they also put Germans into labor camps, and let's talk a little bit. Now you mentioned. Oops, we got to go to a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Back in 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Woo, nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
Your money. What is it worth today? A $100 bill in 1913 is worth only $2 today. So now, your money is just about worthless, and the Fed will continue printing more and more of it. But what if you could turn it around, $1 at a time, and make your money worth more than it is now? How? By acquiring gold before your paper money is totally worthless. But how can you afford gold at today's prices? By buying it 1 gram at a time. And this is so important because gold is the future. For as little as $65, you can begin trading your almost worthless currency for something real, something you can hold. Carat bars, which keep their value, can be stored securely, and are easily accessible, just like a savings account, but a savings account backed by your gold. Carat Bars International, a savings account you can count on. For more information, please click on the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. Again, that's the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. And start saving now.
HempUSA.org introduces three brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide only at HempUSA.org.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership, and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Dr. Nicholas Kohlerstrom. He is the author of Breaking the Spell, The Holocaust, Myth and Reality. Now, in your book, you talk about the primary source records, which I always encourage people to look at. You've talked about the four different records, primary source records, the International Committee of the Red Cross, which visited the camps and kept meticulous records of the identities of those died and their cause of death. And you talk about the death books that the Soviets seized and that were returned in 1989 by President Gorbachev. And then you talk about the Bad Ehrlson, also called the International Tracing Service. And these records consist of three sets, the first set was released in 1979, listed the total deaths as 271,301. The second set in 1983, which lists 282,077. And the third set in 1993, which lists 296,081. And then you talk about the British intelligence decrypts that went directly to Churchill and provide the most authentic information about camp life. And then another set of records, which I would refer to as compiled records, which are not, well, they're compiled. It means people created them. They devised them out of thin air. They devised them out of myth and out of, well, nonsensical kinds of things. And those are the records at Yad Vashem, their database. And how did they create their database? Now, I've been there. I went there in, 1999 in Jerusalem. And it is like a mausoleum, and it's very somber and very church-like and very, there's no guide there. You can't ask any questions. You press a button to find out what it is you're looking at. But how did they create their database?
Well, let me first just add what you're saying about the Bad Olsen, 290,000. That is the total number of recorded deaths in all the German labor camps throughout World War II. Okay, and I recommend that we can add a bit on for unregistered deaths. Okay, there were, some deaths would have been unregistered, but it's not going to go a lot above 300,000, and so you've got less than 200,000 Jews dying in all the German labor camps. I think that's a quite reliable number. Okay,
yes.
Now coming on to the Yad Vashem, you can show that if you put in deaths in Siberia into that, you can search it and so on the web, right? So you can try search it for things. You put in deaths in Siberia, you'll get a thousand cases, okay? Jews who died in Siberia. And it's got a whole lot of duplicated data in, and it seems like any Jews who died anywhere within sort of 10 years of that time can go into it. And I think the number's about 4 million now, and no doubt it will soon go up 6 million. You can't really check. You can't, for example, run the names alphabetically to see who they got or how many times they duplicate a name. There's a whole lot of people, say, who died, say, for example, in Hungary after the war. You can put in their names and you'll find that they're in the database. So it would be nice if we get, say, all of the A's and compare that with the Alsen archive, all of the A's.
Ah, yes, that would be excellent.
You know, that kind of rudimentary, normal, straightforward scholarly analysis would dispel the miasma, you know. But of course, you can't do that. You can't do normal analysis of this kind. I suggest that database is, as you've indicated, just hocus pocus. It can't in any way be taken seriously. It's a center of the New World religion. That's what it is.
Right. Do you think that Churchill or any of the Eisenhower, Churchill, or Stalin ever regretted or felt guilty about what they did at Nuremberg?
No, not at all. No, they just walked away. They'd done it. And the mythology of the good war, which fought against evil, had been created, and that saved their bacon. It meant that nobody ever had to discuss why 60 million people died in World War II. You just have to mention one or two words, Auschwitz and Hitler, and that's enough. And if it's not enough for you, then you must be some sort of wicked, Nazi, or you're something ethically wrong if that's not enough. So the simple duality that we're given of good guys versus bad guys is established by that history, by what they did at Nuremberg. Is what we know is called a psyop, you know. For example, that they went to the labor camps in Germany, and they put in a false ceiling into the shower unit, and with holes in it, and it was good enough to fool visiting American senators, and these were allegedly the gas chambers, okay, and then originally there were various camps in Germany that had alleged gas chambers in for Nuremberg, okay? But as soon as after the war Germans were allowed to visit them, the credibility vanished, you know? They could see that it was just a made-up job. And so these were then non-functional gas chambers or whatever. But the idea of, very soon, the idea of mass gas chambers were only where you weren't allowed to go to. It's important to appreciate this, that the Iron Curtain came down after the war in the East, and you could not go to Poland. So the whole mythology of the gas chambers flourished in a place which traditionally hated Germany, and you weren't allowed to go and visit it. And that's why the hoax, preposterous hoax, lasted for so long.
Right. And Churchill himself said that he knew that history would be very kind to him because he planned to write it himself.
Well, he was the great war maker. He loved war more than anything else, didn't he?
Oh, indeed. In 1936, he said, "We will force Hitler into the war whether he wants it or not," unquote. So he knew exactly what he was doing.
And
in fact, the people of the warmongers in England put him in. I mean, he was part of the warmongers in the Parliament, and they took out the other Chamberlain and put Churchill in because they knew that they could count on Churchill to give him a war.
Well, Chamberlain, he was very uneasy. He's cast as a sort of dithering fella. Anyway, let's not go into the vast, immense question.
Let's not do
the right and wrong
things.
World War II. I mean, one thing I urge people to do in this book is keep the discussion to a fairly limited factual area.
Sure.
But don't go into the vast cosmic miasma of the right and wrong of World War II, which so many thousands of books have been written. Keep a focus.
Yes.
On what happened to the German
I'm addressing some of the issues in the chat room. Somebody made some comments in the chat room that I'm trying to clarify without doing that. But let's get back to, speaking of websites, let's visit your website, whatreallyhappened.info. Did you want to say any more about the Yad Vashem?
I think it's hate crime what they're doing. They're formulating a fictional narrative in which Germans exterminated Jews, every single one, if they could. They wiped out the whole Jewish populations in Hungary and so forth. And that is not only fictional, but it is, I think it's hate crime what they're doing. And if we have got the category hate crime, I think they should be accused of it. And it's not history. I appreciate it's a sacred center of a religion, but it's a false slave religion, which we, the Goyim, need to reject.
Right. And you've talked about all of the, the UN created these legislation, actually, which addresses the crimes, the thought crimes, and all of that. And it seems that there are a lot of people that should be abiding by the policies that were introduced afterward, and yet it only seems applicable to a certain group. I mean, you talked about, let's see, I'm looking in the appendices here.
Yeah, well, we've got legislation right across the central Europe now, banning doubt. You know, doubt is a crime.
Right.
And most shocking thing, Russia just recently adopted it, the whole of Russia.
Yes.
Hungary adopted it. So right across the middle of Europe, I think with the exception of Holland, you've got doubt is a crime. You're going to be put in jail. This discussion we're having now, you know, you'd just be put into jail. So I think we're lucky to be in countries where it's not a crime. But certainly Europe is in a bad state at the moment with this legislation. But as I think you're indicating with your question, the legislation is of the form that they can't say, well, it's illegal to doubt, blah, blah, blah. They always have to put it in the form to have a belief that might cause a disturbance of the peace.
Right.
Right? which is not as such banning it. So I would urge anyone who gets the arm of the law reaching out to them on this matter to be absolutely clear of your innocence, because there's no way the debate we're having now can cause a disturbance of the peace. That's a totally fake concept, that sure. Publishing a book or a belief will cause a disturbance of the peace. It's far more the other way around, that the Holocaust prosecutors who go into people's libraries and check through libraries and terrorize people, that is the disturbance of the peace, in fact.
Right. Well, you say in the book that there's only one book that has ever done that, is the one that was produced by Marx and Engels, The Communist Manifesto, in 1848. And that's really the only book that you refer to in here that really did cause people to take action or to implement some sort of chaos.
Yeah, I mean, books do not disturb the peace.
Right.
I mean, the peace is disturbed by people with loud megaphones or guns or leaflets. That's what disturbs the police, the peace.
Sure.
I mean, the idea of a book disturbing the peace is actually absurd. You know?
Right. Exactly.
Huh.
And you talk about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the European Convention for the Protection of Human Rights, and several of these things, and you talk about hate crime as opposed to actual deeds. You can't even think of something that might be interpreted as doubt. It doesn't even have to be a deed. All you have to do is doubt something.
Well, I think in principle these cases should be winnable. That's what I'm trying to say. You've
sure.
got to have a belief in your own innocence and learn how to use the legal language, and you're actually a peace-loving citizen. What you mustn't do in a trial, just for anyone who does get accused, is try to defend the truth of what you have said. That will annoy the court, and it happens in European trials that is just further aggravates your guilt. Okay. That is not the course of action take. The course of action take is that you're not in any way threatening a breach of the peace. You're mm-hmm. not threatening any ethnic group. You're not threatening a breach of the peace, not at all. And if anybody says you are, it's the onus is on them to provide evidence for it, which, of course, they can't do.
Right. Okay, let's visit your website. It's very impressive. It's just incredibly impressive. I know that many people have contributed to the website. There's so many resources here that people can access. But on the right-hand side, you have all these wonderful links. And people can visit this and click. You could spend weeks, months, just going through the information, the resources that you have on the website. Now, you mention a couple of interesting people. You mention, Dennis Avey, who Carolyn Yeager talked about a couple of years ago. And you talk about Anne Frank. And a lot of people, or I should say, that people will often use these stories like Anne Frank to say, oh yes, this happened because I read the diary of Anne Frank when I was a kid, and so people can relate to her because she's a child. Now if that diary had been written by her by an adult, it wouldn't have as much impact. When in fact, and it says in the Tales of the Holocaust, there's a reference to the Anne Frank diary, that she went forward and somehow she was able to use a ballpoint pen that hadn't actually been invented till when was it, 1953, 1951. But she was able to somehow transcend time and use ballpoint pen, which I thought was very cleverly put.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah. Well, I gather that scholars aren't allowed to have access to the original manuscripts to see, compare who actually wrote the thing. You know, this is a sacred relic that you're not allowed to scrutinize. But what might be important is that she and her father go to Auschwitz, and her father gets put in a hospital where he's looked after, and he recovers, okay? And right. then when it's liberated, Anne Frank then goes westwards on this march to another camp where she finally succumbs to typhus. She doesn't die in a camp, and her father there recovers and gets better. That might be the important thing, really.
Right. All these people seem to get better, and they always choose to go with the Germans rather than the Soviets.
Yeah. Well, Eli Wiesel, likewise. He was in a
Yes, and he wasn't even there, but he still chose to go with the, Germans. Okay. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Extendivite really works. Here is what people are saying.
A year ago, I was realizing that I was in serious problems with my heart. You know, I had these chest pains and so on. I realized that I had to do something and quick. I didn't want to go the medical route. So I started in doing some investigating, and somebody told me about these heart drops. I got on the heart drops prescribed dosage. Within 2 weeks, I immediately started seeing the results. This is working. I'm going to stick with it. I can't deny the fact that when I got on the heart drops initially, there was immediate help, an immediate turnaround.
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils has an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
Come to Finca Baiano, a small community in Panama, which is being established for people who believe that a future crisis may be difficult to survive in North America after a collapse of the system. Go to bugoutpanama.com for more information. There is limited space for 100 people only. Go to bugoutpanama.com to immigrate as long as you can. Prepare. Don't despair at bugoutpanama.com.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Order today at 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org.
All righty, we are back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Dr. Nicholas Kohlstrom. He is the author of a wonderful book, Breaking the Spell, The Holocaust, Myth and Reality, which is available at Amazon. I highly recommend that you purchase this book. It's just a very good read, very, very good read. Wonderful, wonderful book. And the website is whatreallyhappened.info. And we were talking right before the break about how everyone chose to go with the Germans, even Eli Wiesel. I'm not sure how to say his last name, but anyway.
Well, L-I-E is part of his name, which may be no coincidence.
Yeah, especially with L-I-E. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have a signed copy of his book, and it's in very good shape. I mean, it's almost like new. But I only had to read a couple pages, and I thought, this guy is... this is beyond belief.
Well, it's been an object of study in so many American universities, isn't it?
It's amazing.
A textbook, as if it were real history. And it's just frightening. How can people think this is real history? And so much of what is called the Holocaust involves complete negating of basic laws of physics.
Right.
I mean, we live in a physical universe where human bodies don't burn, and especially in Auschwitz, the ground was damp. There were various rivers around it, which is why it was chosen for the industrial work, having rivers around. The ground was damp with a high water table, and you couldn't possibly dig a pit and burn bodies.
Of course not. So
there's a basic, absolute physical impossibility in these things that is just somehow the vividness of the imagination of people telling this Holocaust story overcomes the physical, the basic physical science of what could not have happened, you know.
Right. Well, yeah. You say in your book that bodies are 70% water, and how could you possibly get a whole bunch of bodies in a pit where the water table is so high because of the three rivers conjoining right at that point? And how could you possibly get a body to burn? That, I think you may have mentioned in your book also, that if you got a chicken and held a match under it to try to light it a fire, it just wouldn't happen. You could not burn that chicken.
You could not, no.
Yes.
But in Schindler's List, in the Spielberg film Schindler's List, you do see these burning pyres, and you don't see a human gas chamber. It's quite interesting that the human gas chamber cannot actually be envisaged. It's purely a phantom horror image, okay? Nobody can really depict it. It's like the, witches were burnt a few centuries ago in Europe, and there was the hallucinatory image of the witches' Sabbath that they all go to, right? And that was the basis for them being tried, found guilty and burnt. So likewise, you've got the imagined gas chamber, which can't really be physically depicted, because it'd be quite physically impossible. You couldn't have a huge gas chamber like that working. And no huge human gas chamber has ever existed in human history, okay?
Right.
And so that is a hallucination that then...
A mass hallucination. Now, we have another hour. I know that you're quite a few hours ahead. Are you willing to stay for another hour?
Another hour.
And we'll take some questions?
Okay. Well, I'll try to. I'll just go and get a cup of tea, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll be right back.